gives me great pleasure to introduce Glenn P. to the podium.
Glenn Alcoholic. I'm a lot of other things too. I want to say, take a moment to keep Matt in our prayers and ask for a speedy recovery for him. I found out Wednesday night that he had an injury, a pretty significant injury, and they gave me a call to ask if I do this tonight. And I was honored to be here to do this, and it gave me a good reason to get in here. I haven't been here in a while into a meeting here. I've had some meetings come to my house, which has been good. I do a private meeting on Tuesday night at a men's stag pretty regularly. So I'm staying connected through this difficult time that I'm going through, regardless of how I feel. And that's been important to me. I want to welcome anybody here that raised their hand. That's in the first 30 days. And I encourage you, that sign on the wall is no joke. Keep coming back, you know. Just keep coming, whether you want to come or not. That's what I had to do. That's what I had to do. And I have no clue what to say tonight. I don't, man. You know, it's like I was going to study the book and have something rehearsed. I said, no, man, just speak from the heart, you know. That's what we do. We share experiences from the heart. It's no different than me sitting down in the meeting and listening to somebody else talk about a situation in their life that I get to listen to help me go through something in mine. Because I can always relate to the messages here. Getting here wasn't easy. Staying here has been really hard. I've been more stubborn than willing. And it took a long time to break this guy. I grew up here in Santa Maria. I was raised in Guadalupe for the first 8-9 years of my life. And there's always one in the crowd, you know. And I say that because it's funny how I had to learn how to fight to live in Guadalupe, man. I'll tell you right now, I was a very different kind of cat. You know, I didn't fit in. I had this crazy curly hair, and I was really skinny and tiny. I was a late bloomer, and I fought every day at that bus stop, man. Every fucking day I fought. And I had to. I had no choice, you know. That's just what it did is it put me in survival mode. And there was a lot of trauma going on in my life. My mom and dad were separated early in life. And, I was always in survival mode. And I was always looking over my shoulder to see who's going to try and kick my ass, you know. And I learned quick that if I got in the first couple of blows and arrest somebody else and break up, I always look good. So after a while, they stopped fucking with me, you know. And I earned my stripes that way. And I bring that up because that's my childhood, you know. It was nuts, man. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom was a big old redneck. She liked Glenn Campbell and Conway Twitty and shit. And that shit was foreign to me. This is in the, you know, mid-60s, early 70s. I like rock and roll, smoking pot and hanging out. And she's got this shit going on in the house. I don't get it. And she loved to drink margaritas. She was a big old drunk, you know. That's what she did. And all her friends came over to the house, and they drink, and I'd pop open beers, and I'd sip on them as I was giving them out. And I thought that was just a way of life. I did, you know. It was a madhouse, you know. And I never really did well in school. I didn't. I didn't know how to focus, pay attention. I was always loaded in class, you know. And It was a crazy life. My early years were just nuts. As I approached teenhood, I found that marijuana fixed me. You know, it just did, you know. And it made me feel a part of. I found a group of people, which is all of you guys, really. You know, you take away the drugs, we're sitting here. Take away the alcohol, we're sitting here. And I just related to that type of behavior. And it got me out of all the shit that I was seeing in my household. You know, I learned how to be a great runner. I was a good runaway, you know, and I'd pack my shit and I'd always leave and I'd come home. We hitchhiked all over the place, man. I used to hitchhike all everywhere. Vegas, I can't even name the cities that I've been to. Panhandled for money. I'm doing this at 14, 15 years old, living under bridges. I couldn't comprehend. Somebody would drive by in a nice car. I mean, how do you get a car? I didn't have a family life. You know, I didn't have a role model. My dad wasn't around. I couldn't comprehend how do you do life in general. And the only report card that was perfect score was an absence and F. You know, that's what it was. And by the time I hit high school, I was doing these remedial classes that they would have, and just, you know, doing the same old song and dance, trying to get by. And I met a friend of mine. He said, "Hey, I know this recruiter, and we should go in the Marine Corps together." I thought, that's a great idea. Get me the hell out of here. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I did that, you know. And that shit woke me up, you know. I went down there. We did this like test, and I failed it miserably. And the recruiter got with me, and he said, "Hey, how about I just give you the answers?" One more time, I'm skating by, you know. Skating by, and I said, "Sure." I went home and studied them, and I barely passed. I mean, within a few points, right? like it wasn't a significant margin, you know. And when I got in the Marine Corps, there was 86 of us that went through boot camp, and when we graduated, there was 42 of us, and I was one of them. And I had a lot of heart, you know. I didn't want to fail. My life was over in Santa Maria. I was in trouble all the time, doing shit I shouldn't be doing, getting in trouble constantly, and in and out of juvenile hall. Just, you know, it was messed up. And so I joined the Marine Corps, and it saved my life. And they taught me a lot, but I was still very stubborn on me. I still liked to get drunk and loaded and all that stuff. And I traveled. I went to all kinds of different cities and stuff like that, but I learned how to drink. I wasn't a big fan of alcohol when I was a teenager because I drink and I puke. I couldn't handle it, you know? And but you give me some of that herb, I was good. I had a little bounce in my step. I thought it was cool. Could mix in with the right people. And everything was okay. You know, it took everything away. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got out after 4 years and landed back in Santa Maria, and that's when the drinking took over, and I started getting DUIs and getting in trouble with the law, and I moved down to Los Angeles somewhere in the early 80s, and I went down there to chase a dream that I thought I could fulfill, and I fell short and fell into crack cocaine and had a nightmare for a long time. I chased that drug for many, many years, and it kicked my ass. And I share that with you because I don't really share that a lot, you know? But this is my time, so you get to listen to it. And that drug kicked my ass, and I found Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988 was my first meeting down in L.A. at a place called the Chandler Group, and it saved my life. It saved my life because I was dying. I was about 182 pounds, sopped and wet. My teeth were bleeding. I was sucked up and screwed up from the neck up. And I didn't look healthy. And I couldn't get off that pipe. I couldn't do it. And I tried and tried and tried, and I couldn't do it on my own. So I started going to Cocaine Anonymous. I started learning something about what was going on with me. And I thank God. Even though I didn't stay sober, because I'll tell you what. What happened to me is it manifested into alcoholism. I got off that pipe, and I'm grateful for that. I haven't touched that drug in a long time. It's been probably almost 30 years since I've done that, and I'm grateful for that. But it manifested, you know. It got into more drinking and trying to manage and control my life with that. And as long as I had the job and the right girl and the right circumstances and the right people in my life, they were going to hold me into the man that I should have been. And you know, I was always trying to find peace and happiness and everyone else and every something else. Because I didn't want to look at myself, how screwed up things were. I had zero coping skills. And got a couple of years of sobriety. I had gotten married before I got that couple of years of sobriety, and I totally thrashed that marriage. And well, I'm not proud of that. And the relationship that I have today with my older boy is not good because of that. You know, it is what it is. You know, regret, man. Oh, it's an effing mother. You know, it really is, man. And having to deal with those feelings on the daily as I get older and stay sober and have a clearer picture of what happened during those years, it can eat you alive. And I'm so glad that I have these steps and my God to help release that stuff and my sponsor in my life to work this program around issues like that that are still pending in my life. And after I got a couple of years of sobriety, I met another gal, I divorced her. We got married and we ended up here back in Santa Maria. We went through a really big traumatic earthquake in 1994, in January. We were right at the epicenter of Northridge when that big earthquake hit. And just rocked our world, man. It rocked our world. And we left out of there in fear and made it up here. And I had a couple of years of sobriety. And at that time, I was going to these really well-to-do meetings, you know? You know, the ones that are really cleaned up nice and everybody looks good and they're not smoking in those rooms. And I walk into the rooms of 1600 Club and it was filled with smoke. Oh my God. I'm like, I can't breathe. And I'm trying to sit in the corner and listen. And I'm like, I can't be here. And I left and I judged all you and I still wasn't ready. There wasn't enough willingness. I wasn't willing to go to any length at that time to stay here. And even though I had good intentions, I didn't have the willingness, man. You know, you can have great intentions and want what people want here, but unless I'm really ready to step forth and encompass my life for the way that it is and embrace what I need to embrace and work those steps to the best of my ability with a guide, with a sponsor, somebody who knows what they're doing, I don't have half a chance staying here because I'm living proof of that. I'm living proof of that. I would just bounce in and out. And I can take you through every relapse that I went through, but I'm not going to do that. But I can tell you this. If you're stubborn like me and you're sitting in this room tonight, my only hope for you is that you'll break yourself. That it will be enough. Whatever got you here tonight will be enough for you to say, okay, I'll do something different today. I will do something different today to make a change in my life and walk forward and get help. Like humbling yourself and asking somebody for help was hard for me. You know, it was difficult. Alcoholics Anonymous surrendered. I surrendered. There's a Suzanne N. She used to walk by me all the time and she'd say, Dad, I had this look on my face, I guess, like just tense still. And she'd walk over and tap me on the shoulder and say, when are you going to let go and surrender? How do you know? Do you understand? How do you know? Because we know. We see it. We see it in your face. We see it in your body mechanics. We see what happens when you walk in and out of here and you're not ready, because I've been there. It was hard staying here. When I started coming around to Alcoholics Anonymous here at the 1600 Club, I'm blown away tonight how many familiar faces are in here that were here when I got here. That's how God works, you know? There's a lot of people in here that were here when I got here. And they used to hear me talking out the side of my neck, and I'm sure they walked out of this room, that guy's going to, you know, he's going to go get loaded again. Because really, I was just talking out the side of my neck. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to sound good. I wanted to be a part of really bad. But I still had this manageable life. I was married. I had a nice home. I was working in the auto industry at the time. I was making pretty good money for a guy that had no damn income. I mean, education. I was doing pretty well. And so I had this ego. There was this ego that wasn't ready to be smashed. So I wasn't really ready to do the work that it was telling me to do. Like you guys should point out, you know, work these steps. And I would work some of the steps off the wall, but I wouldn't apply them in my life. And I lived a double personality in here for a long time. See, I'd come in here and I'd listen, I learned how to talk the talk, but I'd go home and then I'd be a completely different person. You know, even though I was sober, I was dry, but I never incorporated anything in my life. Wasn't really praying to stay in, wasn't really reading the book. I didn't get involved with secretarying a meeting or helping others or any of that. All those things that they suggest here, I wasn't doing that. And even though I got a little bit of time and I ended up with like 8 years, it didn't matter. I didn't know how to, like you said, enjoy the journey. I was like on this race. Because I thought the more I got physically, the better she looked in my arm, the more money I had in the bank, that validated me. It gave me something. It made me like a human being in life, because the way I grew up, I had nothing for all those years. So I thought that was it. And I was missing the message here that was going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm hurtling over shit. Just, no, thank you. I got it, you know. You know, they're laying it down on my step, man. They're telling me how to do the work, and I'm not doing the work. But I just want to look good. Because that shit's important, right? As long as I look good, everything's going to be okay. Fuck. A legend in my own mind, man. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to differentiate now in my life between the truth and the false. And I'm so grateful for that. Today I have that peace you talked about, Richard. I have that today, and I'm going through some shit right now, and I have that most of the time. I don't walk around all day and like Gandhi, but I tell you what, I'm alone in this head a lot all day, man. You know? And I have to work this thing pretty hard on a regular basis to keep me in check, because depression is right here. Self-pity is right here. Worry is right here. Not being gone conscious is right here. It's all right here at my hands on the daily. I remember my last drunk. I had been coming in and out of alcohol. Sorry, my mouth is really dry right now. I've been coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for a few days. And probably a couple years, to be honest. And I would sit over here along this wall, and I would be drunk, and I would hear the story. Because getting away from the house and away from her and being able to drink and go to a meeting, that's insane. That just, when I say that right now, that's freaking nuts, man. Like, that's how I used to do at the end of my drinking days, man. It was no longer a playing field of going to the bar and singing karaoke or having fun or at a barbecue. I crossed the line many times over. And I was drinking a lot of whiskey at the time, and I was beer chasing, and that's how I drank at the end of my drinking days. I no longer mixed a drink or had a tequila shot once in a while. It was on. I had to have that bottle in hand, and I had to have that beer in hand. And I did that over and over and over, and I'd come to these rooms and I'd sit along that wall, and then I'd leave. And then one time, I think Daryl pinned me outside. I don't know how many. I couldn't stop raising my hand for 2 friggin' years. Be honest, all right? Like, there's some people in here that saw that. They saw that, you know? And Daryl was outside, and he came out and he talked to me, and he said, "Well, Aunt Burl, what's going on with you, man? You come around, you get your 32, 42, 52 days, and then you take off." And then I come back and I tell him how I'm ready to work this deal, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. He'd say, "What are you going to do the next time? The next time you want to drink, what are you going to do different, man? Because if you don't change, God's going to take, or not God, but he said, alcohol will take from you that wife that you have, that job that you have." And he was right. She was right. She was definitely right. It did. It got me. It got me. And Joe used to, he was my sponsor at the time. God bless you, Joe. Never gave up on me, man. You know, I'd call him and he'd say, "I haven't heard from you for 4 days. Where you been?" He goes, I started drinking again. He'd say, "Well, I figured. How much time did you have?" I'd say, "I'd about 32 days. He goes, "Let's try and get 33 this time." That's what he would say. You know, he never He never patted me on the ass, but he was there for me, you know? And if it wasn't for Joe, I don't think I would have, and Daryl, I would have never stayed here. At the end of my drinking, I was going through some cancer stuff at the time in late 2014, going into 15s, and at the end of it all, my liver was really fat. Like a normal liver activity would be somewhere around 32, 36. Mine was in the 500s. It was really bad. And my doctor was concerned because I was in remission, but my liver was out of control. And he asked me, he goes, what's going on with you? And I copped to it. So I started seeing a therapist there in the, he's laughing at me. I started seeing a therapist there at the center. And if I wasn't for her, I don't know how I would have made it back here. Because I was ready to give up. Like Alcoholics Anonymous certainly wasn't working, right? You know, I kept drinking, so, you know. And at the end of that, she got with me and we started talking. I spent several months with her. And after about 2 months, we started talking. She said, I asked her. I should have never said that. I should have never asked her this, but I said, what do you think of me? Never ask a therapist that. Never, never. She looked at me and she told me the truth. She said, well, do you want to know? I said, yeah. She's like, okay, I'll tell you. She said, you have a mind of a teenager. Man, I'm 55 years old. And she tells me I have a mind of a teenager. And then she said, you have zero coping skills. And I thought, God, I don't like you. And she said, after everything you told me and how you grew up and what happened to you and all the things that you encountered in your life, let's just say that you're a survivor. You're a survivor. And that's where the journey started. She redirected me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called Daryl. And I said, Daryl, I'm ready to stop drinking. He's heard this 1,000 times. Daryl says, oh, yeah, bro. I can see him on the phone. Yeah, bro, it's going to be different this time. I said, yeah, no, man. My wife already told me she doesn't love me anymore. She's going to leave me, and I need to change. And he said, well, I said, the therapist suggested that I taper off. He laughed. He laughed at me, and I thank God that you did. And he said, bro, you're an alcoholic. We don't taper off. And I said, you're right, we don't. And he goes, look, call me every day for a while. Don't drink between meetings. Go to a meeting every day. He goes, the first couple of days you're going to be okay, but then you're going to start not feeling good. And just don't give up. And that weekend, I was working in the on auto industry at the time. And that weekend, I was working. And I sold like 6 cars over the weekend. And I was detoxing in front of my customers. I was sweating and going to the bathroom a lot. And it was hard. It was really, really difficult to let go because I was fully addicted to alcohol. Like that's what scared me is quitting what I needed to get. And you know what? I made it because I haven't had a drink since. I haven't had a drink since. And by the grace of God, you know, I opened my ears and I started listening to what you guys. I don't think I shut up very much though. I think I still talked a lot. But I needed to get a lot of stuff off my chest because a lot of things had happened in sobriety. And it continues to still happen in sobriety. And it's no surprise that one event after another event, I've been able to stay sober because there's been people in this room who have loved me unconditionally, who have sat by my side and walked with me and talked with me and had me over to their house, you know. I don't know how much pie. I couldn't eat any more pie. I spent more days at Bob's house eating pie in the first year of my recovery. And he introduced me to a gentleman. Well, he's no gentleman, but this is safe. He introduced me to a guy that saved my ass today. He saved my ass. And he was from Fresno. My son just moved over there to go to college. And And I was going to be over there several times, and I needed somebody from there. And it just worked out that he had been in the Marine Corps too, and he was the one who gave me the tip on a possible water contamination that I might have been involved in that gave me this cancer that I'm dealing with today. And he suggested that I do the footwork. See, that's what happens here. We don't know. We don't know who we're going to run into. We don't know who we're going to listen to. We don't know who we're going to get the advice from, so we just keep coming back. That's what I got to do. I just keep coming back. And in that first year, recovery was so hard. She moved out. I had to find roommates in my house, and roommates I got were nightmares. And, you know, it was a very rough year for me. And because I was married for 23 years, and now I'm single, so now I'm doing life single, and I'm sober, newly sober, and I got all these feelings coming out my butt, and I'm working these steps. And I'm reading that book, and I'm secretary meetings because this is what I was told to do. And I didn't question it because I got so done of being in charge. As they said, go get, you're going to be the secretary. I only got 3 months. So what? Let's vote him in. Vote him in. Secretary, 3 months. There he goes. And it saved my ass. I dove in. I got busy in that first year. I went through the pain. I did what I was told to do, and I did a lot of writing and uncovering. And then while that was going on, I was also listening to speaker tapes because I love to listen to speaker tapes. And one of my favorite speakers is Bob Darrow from Las Vegas. And I just love him. You know, he speaks volumes to my heart. And I would listen to him nightly as I went to bed. He would be the last thing I listened to. See, now I'm doing everything different, right? Before, I wasn't doing anything different. I was trying to just do this thing. And now I'm doing everything different because people love me unconditionally, but I had to be willing to do something different here. I had to be willing to do something different. That courage to change the things that I can is no joke, you know, because I got fear more than I got faith. That's what I am. I run on fear. I make decisions based on fear. Like relationship shit. She's leaving me, so I'll get in another one. Now you're cheating on her. Well, hey, I thought you were leaving me. No. It's called communication. You go talk to her. Find out what's up. I didn't know how to do that when I got here. I didn't know how to communicate with the opposite sex. I had noise going on in my head so loud that I couldn't just say the things that I want. I couldn't even be me, you see. And when I started listening to Bob Darrow, I started working those steps. We got into the fourth step, and it talks about personal relationships and fear and all those other things that are in there. And I got to tell you, man, it opened my eyes. It let me see how off base I had been for all those years, and I got busy and started listening. And I started taking direction, and I started opening up more. I started taking healthy risk in my sobriety. Like actually going out on a date with a girl was a healthy risk for a guy like me who had been through so much trauma in his life. You know, but I learned how to do that here. I learned how to grow up here, and I have so much more to do here. And I'm not ready to let go of what I have here. Because now, see, it means something. If I put a little in, I get a little out. Joe used to tell me that all the time. But I also know this. Sometimes I can put a lot in and I get very little out. I could just run in place. Because I'm running the show. I'm not really wanting to look at my character defects and my shortcomings. And I keep popping those things back up in my life. And then I keep falling short again. And I'm glad it's progress and not perfection. I'm glad that the only thing that I can do right on Sundays is really just to stay sober, not have another drink in my life. I'm glad for that. Because I got to put the measuring stick down. I got to do the best that I can for the day. You know, it's one day at a time. I don't know how to do one day. I've never done anything consistent in my whole life. I've never been a consistent guy. And right now I feel like I'm consistent. Like there's some stability here. Like it's building a character within me that I never even saw before. I'm still pretty new. 4 years is not, you know, that's a long time for a guy to stay sober. But to really, I mean, there are some people here with some time who have done the journey, and their lives have changed completely. And they walk their walk, and they do what they say they're going to do, and they be where they're going to be, and they help others. And those are the guys that I look to, because, see, here's the thing. If I don't do those things, and I get stuck back on me, it's loaded time. Because I'm not above a drink. I'm not above getting loaded. I'm not above helping somebody. I'm not above coming down here and being called at the last minute to share my experience with you about what's going on in my life today and how I achieved this. I stay as close to this as I can. Even though you haven't seen me here, I'm practicing this on a daily basis. And I'm doing what the doctors are telling me to do. They're like, you know, when you have a chemo treatment, you shouldn't go into large crowds. Your immunity is really low. You can get sick. You get sick, it could be very tough. It's hard for a guy like me that was doing 10 meetings a week to stay home. You know? But I'm learning something out of all this that's going on in my life. I'm learning, like, I'm okay with being okay. Shit! I don't have to be 10,000 places all the time, you know? It's okay. I'm learning how to be okay with Glenn. And I'm learning how to live comfortably a little bit better in this skin, which I never used to feel so comfortable in before. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is teaching me, is loving me. I can't even put into words how much gratitude I have that I get to be here. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous does not need Glenn.
Thank you.
It doesn't. I need Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and it's hard sometimes to admit that, because when we start to learn things here, we think we just know everything, and then we start judgment and opinionated, and you know, we want to pass on poison and gossip and all those crazy things that we do here that are our God-given natural instincts to do. And today I do those things, but I don't do them for very long. I catch myself and I say, okay, redirect my thinking, redirect my actions. Help me follow through with today. What do you want me to do today? Do the next indicator right thing, dumbass. What would that be? Make a cup of coffee, get up, pray. Do something positive for your sobriety. That's what I need to do. You know? So I take this thing wherever I go. I have to. And I put it into my relationships today. I put it into today I have a healthy relationship with my ex-wife. And neither one of us put ourselves through the ringer. She's in Al-Anon today. She's been in Al-Anon now for about 3 years. And she's working on herself too. And we were both sick in that marriage, you know. And we don't have any faults to blame, no axes to grind. You did this, you did that, you regret poison, here's some more poison. You know, keep drinking the poison, that'd be good for you. What we do is we communicate in a healthy way, and we reflect on how things were in a healthy way. There's no argument. You know, we don't talk daily, but we get along. We have an older boy together. We co-parent together very well. You know, and we love that boy very much. I'm so proud to be a father of that son, you know. And I've been in his life since he was a baby. And I get to be there for him today. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to be there, how to show up, how to do what I'm supposed to do. How to give freely to my boy financially. Sometimes I don't want to, but I do. I help him because, you know what, he's a good kid. And he's out there doing what he's supposed to be doing, you know, and he's not a knucklehead getting in trouble all the time. I want to share a little bit about what I'm going through today. So about 2.5 months ago, I've had history of cancer for the last 12 years. And it's always been what they call an indolent stage. So it stays dormant. It doesn't pop out very long. And it always popped out in isolated areas. But the kind of cancer they have is a blood cancer, so it can be very alarming if it gets aggressive. And this time, a couple months ago, I wasn't feeling well, and I went to the doctor and did a CAT scan, and he broke down the news to me, and it was pretty aggressive, you know, and it threw me back. And I had all this fear going on in my life, and I was angry. I was pissed off at the world. Why me? I can't believe this is going on with me. And I had all this poison. And instantly, all the stuff that I had just talked about was gone. Fucking gone. You know? Like, I'm like, wow, this is not cool. And I made some phone calls, and I got busy to start maintenance in this thing, and to where I can, you know, it's like this is alcoholism, right? It's a disease. I got this other disease now that needs to be maintenance. And I work these steps with that deal. That's what I do, you know? The days I'm angry, I allow myself to be angry, but I don't get fruitful in that angerment. You know, I don't stay in it too long, but I allow to see it for what it is. And, you know, I got a good plan together, and the plan's going to be rough. It's going to be a long year. I'll probably wind up in Stanford later on this few months down the road for a stem cell transplant. And at least they got a damn plan. They didn't say, hey, hospice is coming to your house. You got 2 months to live. No, you're fucked, you know. But my head will go there. And I don't know why I get to survive and others don't. I don't know why. And that kind of eats at me a little bit because, you know, when I got this deal, I got it through a water contamination in North Carolina. And I want to tell you the numbers real quick. Over 800,000 people were stationed in North Carolina between 1965 and 1988. Most of them are dead. There was a cleaners who dumped a bunch of degreaser on a regular basis into ravines. And when it rained, it would wash that degreaser down into drinking supply. And this went on for 20 years. And when I was stationed there, they didn't find out about it until a year later. So I was there at the height of the water contamination. But I'm blessed that it was an indolent in my state, that I was able to stay alive for so long because so many others were not. I don't know if the whole 800,000 were sick, but there was several hundred thousand people who got sick and they didn't make it. And I found out through my brother Bob, through another friend who was stationed there, how to apply for this Disability Act. And I did that. I thought, you know what I said? Right away, you know, that stinking thinking comes up. I'm not going to get anywhere with this. This isn't going to happen because that's old behavior. But this guy was 20 some odd years sober. He said, you're going to do the footwork. Just like you do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm giving you direction. Go do this. So I applied. A year later, I found out that all the shit that was going on with me was conclusive. And they took responsibility. And they're taking responsibility today. They're helping me monthly, and they got my insurance back. And you know what? I'm freaking blessed that that is the case. Because if I didn't know, if I wasn't sober, and I didn't meet people that were good for me, and God didn't, he's got the plan. I just got to let him have the plan. I didn't know all this was going to happen. So in spite of everything that's going on with me, yeah, I got a bad deal going on right now. So what? Lots of other people got bad deals going on, man. You know? I just got to remember that I got to be grateful for today, and that I got good character today, and I'm not out to hurt people. I'm not out to make a mess out of stuff, you know? That I can do this thing one day at a time and stay sober because, you know what? God's got another plan for me, and I got to believe that. And it's not always easy to accept. And life on life's terms, right? We hear it all the time, you know? And through Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to build a relationship with myself, more importantly, than anyone else. And I'm comfortable with who I am today. I like the person that's standing up here today. And I'm grateful to be here tonight and share a little bit about what happened with me and what it was like and how I work this thing in my life daily and how grateful I am for this room too, Richard. I'm very grateful for this room. A lot of people in and out of here over the years have chosen to keep coming back here. You know, so if you're new and you're struggling, just do the next indicator right thing, right? Don't pick up, go to another meeting. If you've been here for a while and you haven't helped anybody for a minute and you're in yourself, help somebody, right? We just what we do. And I don't know. I'm out of gas, bro. I'm gonna sit down. Thank you, guys. Right on.
Let's give Glenn another round of applause.